The Athletic.
Totally Football Show, European edition. Today, six goals past the foals as Bayern sealed the title in style. In France, Rennes killed title race while PSG get a check for Prince. It's as you were in La Liga, while in Italy have Milan put Juve's top four hopes to bed with a very soft Pirlo. All those stories and more on the way in this Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power. Hello, listener. It's Tuesday the 11th of May, very probably, and away we go with top continental chums Alvaro Romeo.
Hello.
Julian Laurence.
Bonjour.
James Horncastle.
Hello.
And Raphael Honigstein.
Hello.
We're recording on Monday, listener. We're not the only high-level continental meeting that is going on this Monday. UEFA also getting together. Although you won't get a podcast of theirs, sadly. They're going to be having a chat about disciplinary measures for the three Super League holdouts and also moving the Champions League final. In fact, you might have an announcement on that by the time this podcast drops. Seems like it's going to happen, though. What do you think?
It would make sense, really. I mean, Istanbul is a great city and all of that. And it's their time to have a Champions League final. They should have had it last year. It was moved to Lisbon. They should have it this year. But I think it makes sense for so many reasons to have it at Wembley, for example. The fact that Turkey is on the red list, you know, the list from the UK government, that it will make it harder for fans to go there, certainly from the UK into Turkey. I think for loads of reasons, it would make sense. And Istanbul can have the next one, or we can all move them, you know, the next few years.
I think UEFA missed a trick, though. They could have simply announced that the winner of City-Chelsea on Saturday will also be awarded the trophy. And then you didn't have to do any of this nonsense.
Right. Thanks for that, Rafa. Let's get some moments of the week, anyway, with Paddy Power. Alvaro.
Well, the moment of the week has to be a sequence that starts into the 73rd minute of the Real Madrid-Sevilla game. In Valdebebas, there is a title race, Real Madrid and Sevilla. Both opponents in the night are 1-1 in the scoreline. And then Benzema gets a penalty after a quick counter-attack. But the decision is overturned because there has been a penalty at the other end. Militao touched the ball with his hand. And Rakitic scores a penalty. The good thing for Real Madrid is that after all that controversial sequence, they managed to get a draw. But this sequence probably has been one of the most iconic. And it's going to be one of the most iconic VAR sequences in La Liga history, of course.
Brilliant. Love an iconic VAR sequence. James Horncastle.
Well, it has to be the Champions League playoff on Sunday evening, James, surely, between Juventus and Milan. Just when you thought Juventus could not sink any lower, just when you thought that all these kind of storm clouds, no more could gather around them. But yes, they have, because they lost 3-0 to Milan in what was not their worst performance of the season. And that's saying something, because they've actually done worse against the likes of Benevento and Fiorentina. But it was bad, and this is a very, very bad season for Juve.
James, do you think this is a ploy? So if they miss out on the Champions League, like Milan did a couple of years ago, just say to you, if you know what the punishment, we will not be in the Europa League next season. Fine. That's okay.
Yeah, I'm sure their best player, Cristiano Ronaldo, will really enjoy sitting out of the Champions League. We'll see.
Well, we'll discuss that later on. Jules, your moment of the weekend.
Has to be PSG losing points again at Rennes on Sunday night, which meant that the door is now wide open for Lille to, and I'm not crying, or certainly not anymore, wide open for Lille to win this title, which would be an incredible achievement, and for PSG not to win this title, which would be a disaster.
Right. Jules, it's a shame for PSG with the title, but at least you got a prize that in many ways is even more special, a bizarre record collaboration with Prince's Estate. We'll talk about that later on. Yeah. Rafa, your moment of the weekend.
Well, that's an easy one, James. It's Jadon Sancho scoring a late winner for Dortmund against Leipzig.
Sancho, 16 Meter, zwei Mann sind um ihn herum, mit der Hacke nochmal weitergeleitet, dann kommt der Ball quer. Ja! Und das Tor! Ja! Und das Tor von Jadon Sancho! Ja! In der 87.
to not only lift Dortmund back into the top four places, but more importantly, secure Bayern's title, because with their game kicking off later, they became the 9th consecutive champions thanks to Dortmund's win. They got the news on the way into the ground or in the dressing room, and they celebrated by beating Borussia Mönchengladbach 6-0, as they do.
All right, well, we'll start off with Bayern der Titelmeisters next.
The Totally Football Show European Edition's Moment of the Weekend, brought to you by Paddy Power. Defences may be looking shaky at the moment, but Paddy's offers are rock solid. If one leg of your 4+ fold ACCA lets you down, get a free bet. Max free bet £10, minimum odds 1 to 5 per leg. Online exclusive, no shop bets. T's and C's apply. 18+begambleaware.org.
All right, chase me and share me with your creamy Weiss beer, Rafa. Bayern are... Bayern are champion.
James, there's some things that shouldn't be mentioned on the pod. Can we just get back to what happens in football, yeah?
So, wild scenes of celebration then in the game on Saturday between Bayern Munich and Mönchengladbach. As you mentioned, Borussia Dortmund's result earlier in the day had meant that Bayern already were champions, but they went out and gave a demonstration of why they are number one.
You know, this suggests to me that you didn't see the game, because due to COVID regulations, there was absolutely no beer at all involved.
I know. It's a shame, isn't it?
Yeah. It was all very perfunctory, I would say. They sort of locked arms and sang Campeones a couple of minutes, and then they said, okay, let's go home.
Well, it's the 9th time in a row. They're probably a bit bored of it.
Yeah, I don't know if it's that, but, you know, there's no crowd. They won it by not playing themselves. It all added up to being slightly underwhelming. And as is so typical with Bayern, immediately it was not so much about celebrating, but, oh, next year we have to win the 10th. No one's done that in the top leagues in Europe. We can do it. We can be the first one. That's going to be our aim. And it's like, no one's saying, just, you know what, hold on a second. And the season's not even finished yet. Just enjoy it. No. We have to do it again next year. That's Bayern. That's part of the reason why they keep on winning, of course. But more importantly, because they have the best players and no one can really compete at the moment.
Well, let's talk about how excellent they were against Mönchengladbach. Hat-trick from Robert Lewandowski, which means that he's now just one away from Gerd Müller's 49-year-old goal-scoring record.
That's absolutely right, James. And people thought it could never be done. People thought that even Lewandowski will not do it because he missed a few games injured, but he's come back. And after a bit of a shaky start against Mainz, he's back to near his best. And perhaps just as importantly, the team have decided they want to do everything to help him to break that record as well. And with two games to go, he's got a really good chance of making it. I mean, it's incredible because on the one end, you have Lewandowski possibly scoring 40 goals. On the other hand, you have Bayern conceding 40 goals already this season, which is the worst in 10 years. If they concede two more, it'd be the worst defense in 25 years. That shows you just how vulnerable they have been. But again, unfortunately, that fragility and that bit of an opening that they have allowed to the competition hasn't coincided with the kind of consistency from other teams. And that's why they've been able to kind of... Not run away with it, but maybe walk away with it towards the end of the season.
The second Lewandowski goal was pretty special, Rafa.
It was lovely. It was one of those, we call them Zeitfallzieher, where it's a volley, but you kind of go down as you hit it. Mixed between a volley and an overhead kick, but it's still very much in front of you from a very acute angle. It was a lovely goal. But like many of the goals Gladbach conceded, you were wondering just what the defence, including Jan Sommer's goal, were doing.
The foals, they folded. Well, earlier in the day, and just as crucially for Bayern's title, Dortmund with the 3-2 win away at RB Leipzig. Of course, these two teams due to go again on Thursday in the Pokal final, although I assume, Rafa, the DFB will just say, you won this one, Dortmund, you can have the... poke out as well?
Yeah, they could. I mean, usually it's a showcase in Berlin, but without the crowd, it's not quite the same. Also on a Thursday night, which really shows you just how diminished a event it is this year. This is all to do with the knock-on effect of the Bundesliga games being postponed last weekend because of the May 1st demonstrations, police saying we're too stretched, we can't have all these Bundesliga games on. So they needed to find an extra date for the Pokal. But it's a shame because it would have been in front of the 80,000 crowd. It would have been a really fantastic game. And of course, for once, guaranteed not Bayern Munich as the winner. So still would be a pretty exciting match, I should think.
Well, this was certainly quite a thriller. And this 3-2 result means that, as it stands, Dortmund won't be playing Thursday night football next season in Europe because they've moved back into the top four. No Haaland here as they notched up their fifth league win in a row. But Jadon Sancho, once again, assuming control of proceedings.
He's been pretty spectacular in recent weeks, coming really back to his very best. Just at the time when I think Dortmund need him most, not just because of Erling Haaland not being there, but also with all the speculation about him moving on and Dortmund unofficially sort of naming a price tag. I think it's good timing for him to be as good and as effective as he is now. I think people outside Germany still underestimate how good he is simply because they haven't seen as much of him. But he's been phenomenal once more in recent weeks. And it should be really exciting to see what he can do against Leipzig for a second time on Thursday night. I hope that Erling Haaland will be there alongside him, but he's still doubtful with a muscle injury. But yeah, I think Dortmund very much the favourites after that win. Julian Nagelsmann's record against Dortmund is pretty bad for whatever reason. But at the same time, Leipzig were a little bit unlucky because they came back very strong, having been 2-0 down. And if it wasn't for Sancho's individual brilliance, maybe they would have nicked a point. But yeah, should be a really great game.
Okay, and should be an interesting finale as well. Two games to go. Wolfsburg in third, Dortmund in fourth, and Frankfurt now dropping to fifth after drawing with Mainz on Sunday. Those three teams, anyway, separated by 3 points, so everything to play for. Pretty tight down the bottom as well, where you've got four teams within 2 points of each other. Hertha Berlin, Werder Bremen, Arminia Bielefeld and Cologne. Hertha have a game in hand. One team will go down with Schalke, one other will go to playoff. That's exciting. We'll talk more about that. But right now, while Bayern continue their title reign on the other side of the Alps, the times they are a-changing.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. The Athletic is the only place you can read articles by Daniel Taylor, Amy Lawrence, Phil Hay, James Pearce, Ollie Kay, and the very best football writers around.
Tomori di testa a rete! Il terzo gol del Milan! Tomori ha schiacciato con la fronte!
The sound there of Juve's latest and probably most definitive defeat yet. Juve and Milan, of course, two of Italy's grandest sides this season, also rivals for top four places. Sunday night, they met in Turin, and what was seen as very much a make-or-break game for Andrea Pirlo at Juventus, it turned out to be a 3-0 win for Milan. James Horncastle, how big, how long-lasting will the implications of this result be for both clubs?
Well, it could be huge for Milan, who are looking to get back into the Champions League for the first time since, 2014? They were winter champions in Serie A this season. And then pretty much since January, they've really tailed off. I think they've been quite tired, having played the Europa League preliminaries, Europa League. And they had a lot of injuries. Their January transfer window wasn't particularly good. So I think this was a continuation of a return to form that we've seen in the last 10 days, fortnight, really. And it's big because it eclipses what happened in the reverse fixture. Juventus were the first team to beat Milan in the league this season in mid-January at San Siro 3-1, But this 3-0 win at the Allianz Stadium, where they'd never won before, means that they now have the edge on head-to-head. So if Juventus and Milan finish on level points at the end of the season, Milan will qualify for the Champions League, providing they're in the top four because of that head-to-head tiebreaker. So it was massive in that respect. I didn't think they had to be really that good to beat them. I think what was actually quite surprising was even after they had a penalty saved from Frank Kessié, so the scoreline could have been worse for Juventus, even after Zlatan Ibrahimovic, their talisman, went off injured, Milan actually got better. And I think that's one of the things, that without Zlatan, they're able to press and play at an intensity that causes opponents more problems often. And again, Juventus look like their confidence has been shot to pieces. I don't think they're playing with any particular purpose either. Yeah, I think over the last few years, so much has been made of the Champions League and how that is the primary focus of their season. I think to have gone out in the quarterfinals in Allegri's final year, round of 16 under Sarri, round of 16 again this time around to Porto, to be out of the kind of title race in Serie A, really, I would say from mid-January, when they lost to Inter in the Derby d'Italia, I think this team is running empty when it comes to motivation. I think it's quite interesting what Raf says about 9 years and going for number 10 at Bayern. I think, I don't know whether it's because they're coming off a season which was hard to win the league under Sarri, not particularly enjoyable for the players, and it was through a pandemic, which I think it was very congested. I think this team is just jaded and done, really. I think, and we're going to have to say, I mean, there was a meeting on Monday afternoon, the club officials with Andrea Pirlo, to see whether he should stay on until the end of the season. They've decided that he will. He was pretty firm on his desire not to resign after the defeat. But I think change of manager feels inevitable at the end of the season. We'll have to see what the future holds also for Agnelli and his long-term chief football officer, sporting director Fabio Paratici, whose contract is up. I think what was really significant was that John Elkann, the head of the Agnelli family and Exor, which owns Juventus, was in attendance for this for the defeat. Not great for Agnelli, not great for Pirlo or the players that Elkann was there in the stands to watch them collapse in the way that they did.
You've talked about the future there for some of the key figures. What about one of the keyest of all, Cristiano Ronaldo? No way is he going to be playing Europa League football, surely.
Well, at this moment in time, we don't know. I mean, he's got a year left on his deal. He's paid very well by Juventus, €31 million a year net. So gross, that is a massive salary that they are committing to. And I think the choice maybe Cristiano has to make is he's not going to get paid that elsewhere, you know, and he's not going to be able to enjoy the kind of fiscal benefits that he gets in Italy either, from the Decreto Crescita, which came in. So is money important to him? You know, he's certainly earned a lot throughout his career where he can maybe privilege prioritize his football and that sort of thing. But who's prepared to pay a fee? I think if you look at how much his past fee is amortized, he would cost maybe, Juventus would have to sell him for more than €25 million in order to not to make a loss. So that's the price tag for Cristiano. And then, I mean, his wages are still going to be a hell of a lot, and we're not out of a pandemic. So it's one of those knots that has yet to be untied, is the Italian, I would say.
Do any of you see Cristiano subject of, there's been rumours of everyone from return to La Liga to Old Trafford. What do you think?
Sporting. Surely Sporting would be the best story of all. You know, he goes back to Sporting.
For Sporting.
He goes, you know, the whole family moves back to Portugal. He's close to his mum and his sister and all the family there as well. I mean, they probably would even leave him, let him leave in Madeira and then, I don't know, take a helicopter every day to go to training in Lisbon. I don't know, whatever. But it could make it so nice and such the end of the cycle for him would be brilliant. And then he could almost play for them for free, and they would be in the Champions League next season. Ruben Amorim might still be the manager with all that young generation coming through. It would be perfect.
That's lovely, Jules. Anybody have any ideas of where Ronaldo might actually go next
year? I just wish. I really can't wait for him to sign to Sporting, and then I can show you a big mouth.
Wow. Let's move on to Milan, actually, because while Juve look a little bit jaded, Milan anything but. Fantastic opening goal from Brahim Diaz, who's not been featuring in the side. Lovely to see after his goal that he ran over and immediately embraced the manager Stefano Pioli, and then Ante Rebic with the second, and the final goal, lovely header from Fikayo Tomori. What's going to happen with him, James? Will they hang on to him? Because he's, well, currently Tomori belongs to Chelsea, no?
Yeah, but Milan have an option. I know that initially when they signed him on loan in January, it was considered to be expensive, 28 million. But on the whole, he's performed so well that doesn't look as expensive as it did when they got him. I think, their willingness to sign him on a permanent basis, they wanted to do it. He wants to stay. I think it did come down to whether they would qualify for the Champions League or not. I think that was a consideration at least. I anticipate that he will be a Milan player next season as well. As for Brahim, yeah, I think Stefano Pioli got his tactics absolutely right. This was a gamble to play him behind Zlatan. He could have played Rebic. He could have played Leao, and he didn't. And Brahim didn't just score that brilliant goal. Although what Szczesny was doing, I mean, wonderful cheeky furbizia from Zlatan on Szczesny, where he basically stopped him going back to his goal line, and Brahim manages to curl it into the top corner. He also won the penalty for Kessié, even though Kessié didn't convert it. So total performance from him, and I think Chiellini just had an awful night, certainly in the second half. Handball, third penalty given away this season, and gets absolutely destroyed by Tomori on that free kick. Tomori just outjumps him, and yeah, Chiellini tumbles into the ground, never to really be seen again. Yeah, massive for Milan, as I mentioned, to do it really with a non-performance from Zlatan Ibrahimovic, who I think has had a scan on his knee this morning. Didn't look comfortable after coming off, but I think Milan have shown that they can play without him. Not done yet for Milan, I must say. They've got Atalanta on the final day of the season. And that's Juve, never been though. An easy game for them. Juve though.
Yeah, they've got Sassuolo midweek. And then who have they got next weekend?
Inter in the Derby d'Italia. This was one of the great stories of the weekend as well, because Claudio Ranieri, Saint Claudio, gave a guard of honour. He wanted his Samp players to do that because he'd seen it done in England. And so immediately, questions like, will Juventus give Inter a guard of honour at the Allianz Stadium? I'm not so sure. We'll have to see.
James, how, if anything, has the reaction been on the ground at Juve after the Super League disaster? Is there any sort of pressure from the fans? I mean, are they towing the company line? What's the fallout, if any?
I mean, initially when the Super League project was launched, there was a banner outside the stadium which said, don't drag our club name through the mud, and things like that. But I would say that Juventus is a unique club insofar as the Agnelli family have been involved since, what, the 1920s. So they kind of trust the Agnellis, I wouldn't say blindly, but I think they believe in them in a way that's, for example, fans of Manchester United and Liverpool don't have the same confidence in their owners. I think what's interesting is that Agnelli has been a lightning rod for this. I think Milan and Inter have got away, really, with their involvement in it. I think in Inter's case, they've won the league title, and so everyone's been focusing on that rather than the Super League. In Milan's case, it's been very hush-hush. This Juventus-Milan game could have been the derby of the two Italian teams who were left in the Super League, and I think it was very interesting seeing that statement put out by Juventus, Barcelona, Real Madrid, how disappointed they were with the other teams for withdrawing. I think from Agnelli's point of view, I think he felt that they were blood brothers, particularly Juventus and Milan in that, because Milan hung around much longer than Inter did and didn't leave at the same time as the six Premier League teams did. But, you know, we saw that UEFA will refer the three to the disciplinary commission. We've also seen the Italian Football Federation pretty soon after the Super League news broke that they amended the statutes to their licensing charter, whereby if you enroll to join a private competition that is not recognized by UEFA, FIFA, or the Italian Football Federation, then you forfeit your place in domestic competition. And the president of the Italian Football Federation has again come out today and said, look, if Juventus are still in the Super League, by the time we start issuing licenses for the next season of Serie A, they will not be in Serie A. So Juventus are going to have to come in from the cold at some stage.
All right. Well, it's been a bad weekend all round for the Super League holdouts. Very shortly, we'll be hearing how their Spanish blood brothers got on. But first, a little bit of Ligue 1 news.
Harry, is there any truth in the rumours that you're off to Spain in the summer?
Sorry, me no hablo inglés.
What about one of the Manchester clubs?
Well,
Harry, what about my source who says you're keen to stay at Spurs?
Can we keep the question sensible, please?
Kane's future at Spurs remains uncertain, but you're guaranteed to get money back as a free bet if one leg of your fourfold acca lets you down. Paddy Power!
Max free bet £10, min odds 1 to 5 on each leg. Online exclusive, exclude shop bets and enhanced match odds. T's and C's apply. 18 plus, begambleaware.org.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Smart Speaker, and now ad-free on The Athletic, this is the Totally Football Show with James Richardson.
Jules knocked out of the Champions League in embarrassing fashion, PSG responding like a true European giant.
What do you mean in embarrassing fashion? Which way?
The spectacle in the final minutes there at the Etihad. But it doesn't matter.
That's what happens.
It's all about how you bounce back, and PSG certainly did. Announcing a new and bizarrely random sponsorship with the Prince Estate, not the organic food people, the diminutive Minneapolis funkster, yeah. To craft this.
Icons to icons, you know?
George, could you just explain what's going on there?
I'm not really sure myself, James. They just thought it was a good idea, marketing-wise, to sell Prince Records with a
PSG, the most beautiful club in the world.
Nice.
Love it.
Maybe they should go for controversy. Because, you know.
Yeah, good idea. Yep. 18 anyway. Euros it will cost you if you want that CD. I'm going to buy it for you.
Okay. All right. Well, anyway, on the field, they only drew 1-1 with Rennes this Sunday. Yet another red card.
Yeah. In very similar fashion, to be fair, to the one that Angel Di Maria got in the Etihad, or certainly the one that Danilo Pereira and Kimpembe should have got.
Should have got, yeah.
Yeah. Mm.
Little red card.
Ah, yeah.
Yeah, not a good evening. They probably didn't even deserve a point, I think. They played okay in the first half, scored on a penalty that scored a lot of controversy in France because you could easily not give it and you can give it, controversy again. That Neymar scored. Neymar, who was quite average a few days after signing his contract extension. And PSG in the end, that considered a goal late by Guirassy, who cost them 2 points. And now, as we were saying at the start of the show, leave the door very wide open for Lille to win their first title in 10 years.
It's a sign of the times, Jules. Not sure why, but it's a Prince song, so there you go.
Okay. Is there a joke with Purple Rain to be made?
I don't think so.
Okay.
But it's not a Lille red Corvette. It's Lille 3 points ahead. Damn.
The question is Poch life over now?
Ha! Nice.
Oh, nice.
That's a deep cut. Yeah.
That's a deep cut. It isn't, to be fair, because he will still be there next season, of course. He's already said after the game on Sunday night, we'll have to make big decisions for the squad in the summer, which I think they will or will try, for sure. And then Lille, as you said, 3 points clear. They play Saint-Etienne and Angers, who have nothing to play for. And they will have to lose one of the two and PSG to win both against Reims and Brest to win the title, which I don't think will happen. So
Because this weekend was the game you thought, well, rather on Friday, was the game you thought that if they were going to drop points, it would be against Lens, their big northern rivals, in the derby at Lens. And instead, what a performance, a 3-0 win. And once again, who was the star?
Burak Yılmaz. What an incredible, really, really, I know we've said it a lot on the show through the whole season, but really, someone who's 35 years old, who had never played outside of Turkey before, and who's a great player in the Turkish league and for the Turkish national team, but still to go abroad the way he did, to a much smaller club really than what he's experienced before, with a lot of young players, very talented but still inexperienced and young players, and have the impact that he has, not speaking the language, and he still can't speak French. But to have that kind of impact is really, really incredible. And he deserves all the plaudits, all the credit. Same with Galtier and the rest of the team, the club, everyone. Because they have been fantastic. And if Yılmaz hadn't been injured for 2 months between November and December, they probably would be clearer ahead, to be fair. So, you know, well done to them. That game against Lens, they scored really early. Yılmaz on a penalty. Then Lens did well, to be fair. And create their own chances, but Marc Maignan in goal has been one of the best keepers in Europe this season, without a doubt. And again, it's a shame that he will leave in the summer. But whoever gets him, whether that's Milan or an English club or whoever, will be very lucky because he's a tremendous goalkeeper. Kept them in it, really, kept that win alive. And then Burak in the second half was even better. So they were too good for Lens, like they were in the reverse fixture. And I think they've been too good for most of the teams in France this season. And let's not forget that PSG could not beat them in the two games. Actually, PSG have not done the double against any other team from the top seven in the league this season. They've got 76 points, which is the lowest they had since they lost the title to Montpellier with Olivier Giroud and that great team in 2012. Wow. So almost 10 years.
Well, if Lille can hang on, it will be their first title in 10 years since the grand old team that featured, of course, Jovinho and Johan Cabaye and Eden Hazard, of whom more shortly. I know we were talking last week about their incredible ability to source fresh talent, but Maxi spelling it out very nicely on Twitter. Lille sold Pepe for 80 million and replaced him with Osimhen for 22.4 million. The following year, they sold Osimhen for 70 million and replaced him with Yilmaz on a free transfer. And now Yilmaz has scored 15 goals in 25 games and they're going to win the title. Luis Campos, says Maxi, is a maestro.
He's a genius, absolutely genius, because it's not just what he did at Lille before leaving and, you know, going to get Yılmaz, for example. But I think he's always recognized that you can have the most talented youngsters in the world, and they certainly have some of them at Lille. If you don't have some cool heads who've been there before, who've done it in a way or not, you know, in a way or another, like Jose Font, like Burak Yılmaz, even like Benjamin André, the captain to a certain extent, although he's younger than Font and Yılmaz, you're not going to get anywhere. And I think for him to have sold Osimhen in the way they did to Napoli and then thought, okay, let's replace him by someone quite similar and young like him, like Jonathan David from Ghent, and they went and get him, and who had a great season. But also, let's get someone who can accompany Jonathan David, who all this is very new and you know, he's never played for a team that could compete for a title in one of the big five leagues, with someone who is a lot of experience but who can guide him with advice, with a lot of things, like Burak Yılmaz. Yılmaz, I was told, hardly laughs and smiles. He's just all about work and working hard and being on time and being, you know, demanding and on discipline, on details, everything like that. But for all those kids like Jonathan David, like Boubacary Soumaré, like Botman, like a lot of others, this is what they needed. That's exactly the kind of father figure that they needed in that squad. And he's been there. And I think Luis Campos certainly very, very early on identified the needs of that team in terms of experience as well as talent and youth.
Next up, let's hear about La Liga.
We're sponsored for this episode of the Totally Football Show by Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform helping you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. It's your perfect teammate, the Sutton to your Shearer, the Heskey to your Owen, the Mane and Firmino to your Salah. Whether you're selling I Belong to Jimbo t-shirts or Max and Barry half and half scars, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, which is up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. Plus, you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. And what's more, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 support is there to help your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Now, because you listen to the Totally Football Show, you can sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/totally, all in lowercase. So go to shopify.com/totally to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. That's shopify.com/totally. This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
Alvaro, the top four playing each other in La Liga. What an exciting title race weekend this was. Barcelona against Atletico Madrid on Saturday. On Sunday, Real Madrid taking on Sevilla. So Barca-Atleti, Messi against his old friend Suarez, finished goalless. What a huge chance for Real Madrid then, come Sunday.
Yes, but they didn't take it. I mean, it was one of those weekends that coincidentally the calendar gave us this present. And I think that both games were, I wouldn't say equally nice, but they were good enough. I think that the La Liga, as I have said repeatedly this season, hasn't been particularly good, but it's been the competitiveness of the competition at the final stages what is making it nice now. And probably this is the best title race in Europe at the minute. And Barcelona, you know, they needed to win, beat Atletico de Madrid, and they needed to beat Granada in the last home game they had. And they have only got only 1 point out of six at home in the last two games. And that hasn't disqualified them as title contenders, but they have put them in a very difficult situation because after drawing against Atletico de Madrid, number one, they didn't depend on themselves to win the title already. But now there are two teams, Atletico de Madrid and Real Madrid, that depend on their own results to win the title, and Barcelona has to get as many points as possible and wait and expect somebody to make to have a dip in their form, to sleep, to not to get a result here and there. I think that the game for Atletico was the kind of game that Simeone would have wanted from his team, with the team pressing high at the beginning, having a couple of chances in the first half. By the way, Lionel Messi was about to score one of those goals that would have become viral, because he pretty much dribbled past like five players in the first half, and then Jan Oblak did an amazing save. But the goal didn't come, and not Diego Simeone, who has never beaten Barcelona in the league as Atletico de Madrid manager, or Alfred Schroeder, who was the manager in the absence of Ronald Koeman, were too happy with the result at the end of the game. But Simeone was slightly happier, because he knows that with this draw, he still has the upper hand against Barcelona.
Right. I hope nobody was laughing with their former teammates like Griezmann or Suarez at the final whistle, because we really don't like to see that kind of thing in football. Eden Hazard, of course, was shaming the game with that kind of behaviour after the midweek clash with Chelsea. How much did the fact that he was the player who popped up in, what, the 93rd minute, earning a vital equaliser against Sevilla, how much has that rehabilitated Eden with the Real Madrid faithful?
Not much. If you open the newspapers today, on Monday, you won't see a lot of praise for Eden Hazard, because pretty much he didn't create, or he didn't participate voluntarily in scoring this goal. Let's put it that way. I mean, it was just a pinball situation that benefited Real Madrid and Eden Hazard. But the critics on him last Thursday were way too much. I mean, the way El Chiringuito started their show. El Chiringuito is the show where Florentino Pérez spoke 2 weeks ago after presenting the Super League. The way El Chiringuito criticized Eden Hazard was definitely cruel the other day. He was pretty much insulted. But yeah, this time, I mean, Eden Hazard didn't start against Sevilla. He scored the winning goal, yes. But I would say that the protagonist, or let's say the talking point, is another one this time. The talking point is what happened in that sequence that I said at the beginning of the show, when Benzema was fouled inside the box by Bono in the 73rd minute of the game, 1-1 in the scoreline. The referee called the penalty, but right after that, he got to check something, an action that happened in a Real Madrid box a little bit before that, and it turned out to be a handball of Militao. Controversial handball. And the referee had to overdo his decision. He called off the penalty to Benzema. He gave a penalty to Rakitic, to Sevilla. Rakitic scored, and then Real Madrid got the 2-2. And I have to say, this goal by Eden Hazard, by the way, even though Hazard won't be taken out of credit mediatically, at least for this goal, it changes the landscape a lot, because Real Madrid would have found it very difficult to win the league if they had lost against Sevilla. But now they just have to get better than Atletico. But if they had lost, they would have been, or they would have been obliged to be better than Barcelona too. So I think that this scoreline, 2-2 against Sevilla, is not that bad after all for Real Madrid.
Okay, so there's 2 points, Atletico Madrid at top, and then 2 points behind them are Real Madrid and Barcelona. Yeah. Alvaro, was there also another point in this game where Real Madrid thought they'd scored, and there was about 10 minutes before, certainly in the English commentary, they realised that the goal had been disallowed by VAR, but nobody had bothered to tell the commentators?
Well, I think that, that happened, but I think that the broadcasters showed all this terribly. I mean, Karim Benzema scores a goal, the goal gets ruled out, and in the screen you get just VAR check, all right? But it was never said that VAR check was over. So therefore the commentators didn't know whether that goal from Benzema was standing or not. And to be honest with you, it was difficult to know it for any viewer who was not at Valdebebas. And yeah, this was a monumental mistake, of course. And the goal was ruled out only for a marginal offside as well.
Right. Okay. Who's going to get it, do you think? Alvaro, who's got the tougher run in?
It's difficult to say. I think that the easiest calendar on paper is Barcelona's one, because they are playing against Levante, Celta, and Eibar. But it looked like the game against Eibar in the last round of La Liga was going to be a doddle for Barcelona, because Eibar was set to be relegated, but they have won the last two games. And Eibar are going to be in the know until the end, presumably. So I wouldn't say their calendar is as easy as it sounded at the beginning. Real Madrid are playing against Granada, Athletic Club Bilbao at San Mamés, which is historically one of the toughest away games you can get in La Liga. And they are playing against Villarreal as well. So I think that Real Madrid's calendar is the most difficult one. And Atletico, they are playing against Real Sociedad in the midweek, then against Osasuna, and then against Valladolid. I think that Real Madrid's calendar is the most difficult one. But Real Madrid has one thing that is a monumental advantage. I mean, they've got a positive head-to-head against Atletico and against Barcelona. The only team that will lose the head-to-head in the case of leveling on points against both teams could be Barcelona, because Atletico and Real Madrid have better head-to-head against them. But anyway, here I want to make the point that I don't know if the head-to-head, well, in my opinion, it's silly to use the head-to-head as the tiebreaker in a competition like La Liga, because the head-to-head is not representative of what happens in the 38 games. And normally we call La Liga in Spanish the tournament of regularity, and the head-to-head doesn't show any regularity in there. It doesn't represent what regularity should mean. I think that the goal average, as they use it in England, is a better tiebreaker than the head-to-head, definitely.
Okay. I mean, if, say, for example, Barcelona beat Real Madrid home and away, but then ended up behind them on goal average, you can understand their fans going, well, we're better than them, we beat them.
Yeah, I agree.
But I think that, really, I'm going to say this again, but the goal average, at the end of the day, explains how good you have been from September until May.
Well,
until
that's
May. True.
And it is a league, not a cup competition.
Yeah, exactly.
One last thing, Alvaro, for now at least. You mentioned Villarreal and the crucial part they will play potentially in the title race. What about their chances in the Europa League final in Gdansk?
I think that Manchester United is the favourite for this one. In fact, I think that Villarreal and Arsenal in 2006 were closer in level terms than Manchester United and Villarreal are now, as strange as it may sound, because that Villarreal had a lot of referential players in South America, like Diego Forlán, Sorín or Riquelme. But I do believe that Villarreal, they are clever. They know how to slow down the game, as we saw against Arsenal, and this is something that Manchester United would prefer not to happen. And then there are some players in there, like, for example, Pau Torres, who is one of the best prospects for Spanish defense. Gerard Moreno, who hasn't scored lately, but Villarreal keeps on getting the results without him being in the scoreline. Then Dani Parejo is playing very well. So I think that Manchester United is the favorite. Yes, they've got bigger depth in the squad. They've got more speed. They've got more firepower, certainly. But Villarreal, they are not silly at all. And normally they don't make silly mistakes. They are quite professional. And I think that this is going to be a nice final after all.
Alvaro, just to pick up on what Raf said to me about sort of continuing Super League fallout in Italy, what about in Spain? I know Perez has obviously spoken a lot, but what about Laporta? I mean, Laporta kind of took over from the most unpopular president, arguably, in Barcelona's history, and yet he seems to be standing by this as well. Has that impacted the momentum that he kind of built up when he became president of Barca again?
It's difficult to know because, you know, we haven't had any fans in the stands, and at the end of the day, that is what it tells you, what the referendum or the opinion is about the standing president. It is true that Joan Laporta and Florentino Pérez, they got a little bit of a difference here, whereas Florentino Pérez decided to sign Real Madrid unilaterally for the Super League. Joan Laporta did that, but playing the Super League or not was always going to be a decision that ultimately the members could have a say on, whereas at Real Madrid, I think that that was never going to happen. But yes, apparently, in the last El Clásico, in Valdebebas, Florentino Pérez and Joan Laporta exchanged a conversation. I don't know if it was virtual or face-to-face. And Florentino explained Laporta that he could be second-hand to him or even be the president of the Super League at some point in the future, and Laporta felt good about it because not only because that would be that would mean that Laporta will be in charge of something big or would be in charge of something big, but also because Barcelona needs to be in the Super League. At the end of the day, they've got 1 billion debt, and this competition was a little bit like the way of saving Barcelona's future. And now Laporta will have to find like imaginative ways of getting some cash and some money flowing for Barcelona. One thing that still strikes me is the little contestation that Real Madrid and Barcelona have had everywhere, by the fans, by social media. I think that it explains a little bit how Spain works as well. I think that many politicians and many people, they are used to getting away in Spain with their own way. But when you put that in the European scenario, it is more difficult. And I think that Florentino still doesn't believe, or it still doesn't accept, for example, what has happened to him. That suddenly he was supposed to be the president of 12 or 15, and now he's basically the standing man out of three, you know.
He's president of the new Trofeo Berlusconi.
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, it's like a summer tournament as it stands, really. A triangular tournament between Juve, Real Madrid, and Barcelona.
He's like one of those soldiers in the Pacific. 10 years on, he's still in the tree.
Yes, hidden in the bushes.
Yeah, if only. All right, next up, how about we hear some of the other stories that took place this weekend in Serie A?
You're listening to The Totally Football Show, sponsored by Paddy Power.
Just the 39 goals this weekend in Italy's top division, 39 goals, woohoo! 15 of them were scored by three teams, five each for Inter, Atalanta and Roma. Inter, who whooped Sampdoria and got a guard of honour beforehand. As James mentioned earlier, they'd like one next week too in Turin. Only two goals for Fiorentina, meanwhile, but two goals which ensured their top flight status for next season, beating Lazio 2-0 there. Guess who got those goals?
That's got to be Dusan. Dusan, the man Vlahovic, young player of the year.
21 league goals this season. Benevento in the big relegation battle. They're now 3 points from safety. And Spezia, Benevento, of course, managed by Pippo Inzaghi, had a huge battle with fellow strugglers Cagliari, who were a point above them going into this. Tell us more, James.
Well, there was a very controversial penalty decision in this game, which then provoked one of the almighty rants that we have seen in Serie A for a long, long time. I think it's right up there with Malisani and his Cazzo rant. This was the Benevento owner who accused the VAR of acting in bad faith, and he is put in charge of all the games against teams from the south because he alleges that this referee or VAR wants to kill the south.
Kill the South. I was confused by this. A, because to me it didn't seem that controversial a decision to overturn the penalty, which the player dives. But there is a bit of contact, and then he kind of... But he's already going down when the knees touch. But also, if you're trying to kill the South against Cagliari, where's Cagliari?
It's true. Cagliari, even though it's in Sardinia, which is an island off the coast, is considered part of Italy's South. So... Yeah, it's a baffling one. But as Vigorito, the Benevento owner, said, yeah, we've made so many sacrifices this year in wind, rain, cold, and sleet. And this Mazzolini guy, what does he have to do? He puts his ass on a bench, and he can't even see the decision that Vigorito wants him to make. So there you go.
The TV host, while he's doing all this, says, well, thank you for unburdening yourself. He wasn't. He said, I'll go to a priest when I want to unburden myself. He got very upset.
He really did. In really thick kind of Campanian Neapolitan accent. Yeah, it's brilliant.
We've got a midweek round coming up, James, and then we've got huge fixtures at the weekend with Juve-Inter, as mentioned, but also the Rome derby, which could have an impact on the Europa League spot, something that Jose Mourinho will be keeping an eye on, no doubt. Who's your favourite for the top four? Do you think Juve can break back in? And what should we look out from the midweek games?
So my top four would be Inter, Atalanta, Napoli and Milan. I think that's it. I mean, the two form teams at the moment in the league. Leaving Inter aside are Atalanta and Napoli. Napoli scoring goals for fun at the moment. It's very strange, really, that Gattuso will be leaving at the end of the season. But I think in terms of midweek, I think you've got to keep watching what happens at Juventus, because Sassuolo have been in fine form of late under Roberto Di Zerbi, who's, you know, very much the Bielsa of Serie A, and it's probably going to be his last few games. He's been linked with a move to Shakhtar in Ukraine, and I can completely see them causing all sorts of problems for Juventus. So let's see. I would keep across that game if I were you.
All right. Also, of course, Benevento's next fixture is that they take on a truly northern side, Atalanta. Lovely. One or two questions from listeners just to finish us off. Eldin Hazic asks, where will Pjanic go after the season? Does he have anything left? Can't get on the pitch at Barca, but Juve looked terrible in the midfield after he left. What do you think, guys?
What I would do is I would send Artur back to Barcelona in exchange for Pjanic. I mean, clearly,
for 80
Pjanic
million.
Is, as Raphael Honigstein will know, the reason why Juventus have relinquished their ninth Scudetto is because Miralem Pjanic is no longer there.
World class player.
So that would be my answer. We've got some breaking news in that Salernitana, returning to Serie A, James.
Oh, no,
for the
not
first
another
time
Southern
since...
club.
Exactly. For the first time since you were there in 98-99.
Delio
when they had
Rossi.
That team of Delio Rossi, Gattuso. Marco Di Vaio, Rigobert Song.
Rigobert Song, I was going to say, yeah.
But of course, they are owned by Claudio Letito, who also owns Lazio. This can't happen, can it? We'll have to see.
So messed up. Claudio Letito, who's currently banned from any kind of federal duties as well, because of the we don't need to get into all of this. But you remember when Lazio had some players test positive for COVID, and they went, "No, actually, we'll do our own tests with our own lab." Oh, look, they're actually all
negative.
They're fine. Yeah, they're fine. So anyway,
and does that mean Monza will have to go through the playoff? Because if Berlusconi and Lotito both go up, it's.
Monza lost to Chelino's Brescia today, who have been in great form under Pep Clotet, former Leeds and Birmingham manager. They lost 2-0, even though Balotelli, I think the weekend on Friday, scored a couple of goals, came to the rescue for them. Another breaking story which we should follow, it regards the champions Inter. Inter fans very aggrieved that someone is trying to poop on their party, so to speak, after winning the title. With all these stories about Inter's financial distress, well, Steven Zhang, the youngest president ever to win the league, has obviously been back in Italy for the first time since 7 months. He was partying with them, and now, on Monday afternoon, he's told them that they have to forego 2 months' wages.
Right, that's their Scudetto premium prize.
That's a big bonus for winning the league.
Yeah. Scudetto right. Tax.
On the promoters clubs, Espanyol is back in Primera División as well, in La Liga.
Brilliant.
So, yeah, after pretty much 11 months after getting relegated, they are back. And they've been by far the best team in the Spanish Segunda División. They managed to keep Raúl de Tomás, the striker they bought from Benfica last season, and he has made such a difference in the Spanish second division. So congratulations to them. Barcelona will have two teams in La Liga next season.
And, Más o menos.
More or less. but they were good. They were good. And on Pjanic and Artur, I mean, I think that the misuse or the underusing of Pjanic by Ronald Koeman is quite remarkable as well, because Pjanic could have made a difference for Barcelona this season. A player like Pedri, for example, now looks drained. I mean, he's 18 years old and he has played pretty much every game. And Pjanic has disappeared from the lineups and also from even from the games in the last 3 months. And, you know, he was never that bad for Barcelona. I don't understand why.
Hamburg aren't coming up, are they, to the Bundesliga? Poppleton Pink wants to know, who will be promoted first, Hamburg or Schalke?
Well, Hamburg are only fifth at the moment. They need a minor miracle, James, to finish in the top two or even in third. But they are playing Nuremberg tonight with a chance to make up a bit of ground on Düsseldorf and Kiel.
Jules, meantime, who's coming up from Ligue 2 since we're talking about that kind of thing?
Yeah, Troyes have been promoted this weekend.
So you can get Troyes from Deux. That's interesting.
Troyes from Deux. Deux to un. Troyes from Deux to un. Yeah, well done to them. And their young manager, Laurent Batles, who's been fantastic and unfortunately for them, is not going to stay and we'll go to a bigger club.
Well, we'd love to stay with you, listener. But that's where we've got to wrap things up for this European edition of the Totally Football Show. Of course, the regular show will be back on Thursday, reacting to whatever midweek things there are to react to. And then we'll get the boys back together, Alvaro, James, Jules and Rafa, next week for what should be a slightly more definitive look at the title race in Spain and probably France and that whole top four picture with Juve and that in Italy and more from the Bundesliga as well. I hope you have a great time. In the meanwhile, many thanks to everyone who put this show together. And from all of us here, it's ciao, ciao.
You've been listening to the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Keep up to date with everything Totally at thetotallyfootballshow.com and follow us at The Totally Show on Twitter and Insta. Check out all of The Athletic's football podcasts on Apple, Spotify and all the usual places, or listen ad-free on The Athletic app. The Totally Football Show is a Muddy Knees Media production and sponsored by Paddy Power.
The Athletic.